Okay, there you go.
Hello, Han. How are you? Unmute yourself and start your video if you can, so we can all have a chat. Karen, welcome.
Well, that's the background I want to see, Jeff.
There you go. Very nice.
That's the way we should spend your time.
Okay. Let's see. I think we should be able to unmute everybody if they want. All right. Ryan, did you want to say a few things off the top?
Just obviously welcome to the April product management session with us, TechConnex, and obviously a big thank you to Lee Garrison of the Toronto Product Management Association. And we have a really good guest today. Well, we always have good, we usually don't have guests actually, but Lee's always done an amazing job for us the last 2 years. But today we got Scott Miller. He is the founder of Miller Advisors, boutique consultancy specializing in pricing and offer design strategies for B2B software companies. And Scott has a boatload of pricing experience. I think I don't want to date you. 20 years plus of experience as a senior consultant, global pricing. He's worked with some large technology firms, and he's a lecturer, he's an intellectual, and he's a Netflix binge watcher. So thank you, Scott, for joining us today.
Yeah, who's not a Netflix binge watcher these days?
Right. Yeah. Intellectual. I hadn't heard that one before.
Oh, Scott. That's nice. I like that.
Right, right.
Yeah, I might challenge that, but you know.
Well, welcome, Scott. We're, really pleased that you could join us today and take the time to talk about this, because I think it's a really relevant topic for almost everybody. And by the way, there are a few of us that have been around for 20 years. So you're not alone. Yes. My friend Saeed Khan and I always say, yeah, we had our first product manager jobs back in the last millennium. Anyway, that'll, I think we'll probably stop saying that in a few years.
Yeah.
All right. So just a little housekeeping here. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Lee Garrison. I've been the facilitator for the product management peer group for the last year and a bit. Obviously this is a little different format than, we would do in person. However, you didn't have to commute, so that's probably a good thing. I found doing a lot of these meetings, if you are comfortable with turning on your video, please do. It makes it much more sort of personal and more like a real life conversation. As a peer group meeting, this is really meant to be interactive and a discussion. So the format is I'll have Scott talk about pricing sort of at a higher level, some concepts that you might or might not be familiar with, and then we'll really dig into more applied examples and specifically your situation. So this is an opportunity for you to ask questions that are relevant to your business, and pick Scott's brain and get some guidance and advice on what sort of things you might think about or do differently. Just as a sort of quick introduction, I think everybody should be able to unmute themselves, but I will do it in case you haven't. Let's go through just like very briefly, each of you, what's your business and what's your sort of interest in pricing? So let's start with Jeff.
Sure. Jeff Charlton. I run a firm called FlexServe. We become the in-house accounting and HR for small and mid-sized business. So instead of them needing to hire full-time CFOs, controllers, bookkeepers, or HR professionals, they come to us and they might ask us to do like a day a week or 2 days a week of bookkeeping, controllership, HR, etc. My interest in pricing actually is like in January, February, we have just sent out a notice to all of our clients raising our prices. Unfortunately, with what's happened, we've had a number of them push back. Probably harder than they otherwise would have. We hadn't increased our prices in a long time. But because of what's going on, as you can imagine, a number of them are under significant pressure just to survive. You know, my interest is not only in the overall, like, pricing, I think is very interesting, but also given these times, how do we adapt when sometimes our own costs are still going up as well?
Right. That's great. Okay, good. We'll come back around to that. Patrick?
Yeah, good morning. For the direct business I work for full time, we do gaming software, right? So it's our pricing is not really so much relevant, like it's casino games. But I do a reasonable amount of advisory work for some other companies and do some teaching at Mars. So pricing quite often comes up, and I guess I'm just looking for a different perspective from my experience today.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. Okay. Let's see. David, welcome.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah. And we're just sort of doing a quick introduction so Scott understands who's on the call. You know, what's your business and what's your interest in pricing?
Okay. So we are an e-commerce platform for marketplaces and e-commerce. And our challenge is we're selling globally to both enterprises and mid-sized businesses in different countries. And the challenge is if you put the price too low, then the enterprises go away. If you put the price too high, then the small businesses go away. So how do you segment the high-low? Some other companies seem to have two separate brands and two separate sites. We've done it all on one site, and we recently added small business options, and I'm just concerned it might make some of our enterprise potential leads go away. So that's where the problem is. How do you provide this wide range and yet do it in a way that works as well? Plus, there's massive problems with pricing in different countries, like India and Panama and Latin America. You need to give more aggressive pricing that you do not want to offer in certain countries like Europe or US or even Singapore, so yeah. forth. So this is the challenge in terms of how you handle it. This is part of it. Then there's psychological elements of pricing as well. What numbers work for people? Anyway.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's great. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, David. I think Scott, you were just over in India like earlier this year, right? So he has quite a bit of experience with international stuff too. So we can get around to that.
I used to work with BlackBerry and managed all of their global pricing. So well versed in pricing for Latin America and India and all that, and throw in the taxes as well that a lot of people don't think about for their price points. I mean, that's my hair's got grayer because of BlackBerry.
I hear you.
Okay. Karen, introduce yourself and your business and what's your interest in pricing.
Sure. Thank you. So I'm Karen Wong, the co-founder and CEO of Taku Labs. And I'm interested in pricing because I have two companies. We have Taku Labs is actually a startup. So it's a spinoff of an existing company I have. We're in the retail management space, retail software space. So think checkout points at supermarkets and whatnot. Obviously, we're heavily impacted by the current COVID situation. I'm lucky insofar as I'm able to, with my existing company, the installed base, we're offering e-commerce services. We're helping people migrate to obviously selling online and everything else like that. Generally speaking, though, I mean, that business is a combination of selling, you know, one-time licenses and ongoing support plans, which is very typical of that type of industry. Obviously, my new platform is cloud, and so we're doing SaaS. So we're talking about a cash flow problem and converting really what are kind of one-time payments and lower support fees to an ongoing cloud payment, right? And the problem is, the goal obviously is to migrate existing customers. We do have the problem in that we're now faced with this COVID crisis where before customers were understanding of, okay, I can see the value of not having a tech person and not having this and that, and therefore you're hosting. We're just wondering about, because we're supposed to launch last month. So that's not really going to be happening. And even if we do, we're thinking, okay, where do we come into the market now, right? If we start at what we thought was the price we thought we could be at, is that going to not work at all for existing customers? Yet at the same time, my real target in the long term is mid-size retailers, not really small. So, it's just really figuring out how to manage this specific COVID impact right now.
Right, right. Yeah. That's great. Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Vanny, tell us about yourself.
I'm the managing partner of a company called Building Perspective. We are a process management consulting company. And so while we don't have software of our own that we price, we work with a lot of companies on their e-commerce solutions, on their, we do technology assessments, and we recommend upgrades and that sort of thing. So my interest today is to understand how to guide them and what are some of the factors that they have to consider, or, you know, get some background information on how software is priced, so I can, you know, give them better advice on these things.
Great. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Pat, tell us about yourself and what's your interest in pricing.
Good morning. My name is Pat Foley. I'm with Internet Light and Power. We're a telecommunications company. We're about to launch a new service. So much like Karen, we're kind of looking at the market going, is this a good time to do it? Certainly COVID has had a heavy impact on all sorts of aspects, but people are very reliant on telecommunications. And I think there may be a lot more opportunities for technology and telecommunications coming out of this. But in our market space, of course, pricing is always under a lot of pressure because of the major competitors in the marketplace, the telecommunications telephone company and cable company. So we're looking at whether it's reasonable to price based on cost or whether it's better to price based on competitive activity with this new service. So I'm quite interested in, you know, the different perspectives and any advice you have on pricing models that are useful.
Yeah. Great, great. Right. Thank you. Thank you, Pat. I think last but certainly not least, Han, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us what your interest is in pricing? Do you want me to unmute you?
I'm going to read here. He's just texted, I think, in there. You can see, I don't know if you can see the chat, but he just said, good morning.
Oh, okay.
He said, sorry for not activating video and audio because of the background noise. He's having a kid who's having a party back there. He's an entrepreneur working on a platform which aims to streamline the commodity transactions, especially on mineral commodities powered by blockchain technology.
Awesome. Thank you, Han. And I would highly recommend a little app called Crisp, K-R-I-S-P. It's a noise canceling app that you can add to Zoom, and it'll take care of all those kid noises and dog barks and all that kind of stuff. It's great. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, everybody. That's a lot to unpack, I think, Scott, but why don't we start with sort of a high level view of some of the models, and then we can drill into the specific applications to some of these points.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks for the background, everybody. What I'll try and do is cater some examples and whatnot to what I heard in the group as well. So I'm just going to share my screen here. I do have some slides that I'll go through, and you know, my goal here is just to really kind of talk high level, plant the seed, start driving some thoughts and whatnot, and to get a good discussion going here today as well. So let me just see if this works here. Share. I think everyone's getting used to Zoom by now. Let me know. Can you see my screen? Okay.
Yes, we can. Sorry, I was muted.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you were on mute there. Okay, so let me just large size this. Yeah. My toolbar is getting in the way here. Okay, bear with me for 2 seconds. That's what I needed. Okay, how's that? Okay, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about pricing in the digital era, but I think, you know, of course, as we go through this, let's add some flavor about, you know, the challenges I think a lot of companies are going through right now, trying to figure out as well, how do you price in a downturn? Everyone's feeling the pain right now, and it's, you know, definitely in the last week, there's been a lot of questions coming through on my end around, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to price in a downturn? And especially with software, you know, there's a lot of B2B companies that, you know, they sign up for long term. And some of these companies, you know, I think the average term length is about 3 to 5 years now for most B2B software companies in terms of a commit from a lot of the clients. And in those particular cases, you know, your pricing that you do this year sets the stage for the next 10 years. So it's kind of that, you know, what are some good tactics that you can use so that you share the pain maybe in the first year, but you don't, you know, cannibalize or destroy your product offering for the next 10 years with whatever clients you onboard. So let's talk a little bit about just pricing in the digital era, and then let's get a conversation going. So a couple quick quotes that I'd like to start off with is really around that future technology is going to be driven by the rapidly changing world of software-enabled systems. And this was a quote from almost about 10 years ago. And it's so true. Like, just think about all the hardware that you see these days and anything that we consume, everything's got, you know, this digital component that's being added to it in today's environment. And it's really created this complexity in a lot of people's worlds about, you know, we used to sell hardware, now it's integrated with software. How am I going to sell this? What's driving the value? Is it the hardware? Is it software? Is it the combination of the two? And that's where you get a lot of pricing questions coming into play. The next quote's really interesting. It's around 20 years ago, 70% of the military defense spend was on steel. And now 70% is that on software. So again, it's that question in the digital era, what's driving the value? And it's just really interesting that in this particular market segment, it's really, you know, it's the software that's driving, you know, the competitive advantages and whatnot. And so, you know, I find that with a lot of companies, and I would say almost every company is going through some sort of digital transformation. But it's really creating this, you know, the whole business model is changing for a lot of companies. And because that business model is changing, the companies are now trying to figure out, how do I price this product? You know, with a lot of this new innovation that's coming out. So just some examples. I mean, there is a lot of innovation that's coming out. And most companies are doing something, at least in this kind of splash slide. And I've just been finding there's a lot of themes that keep coming around when people talk about innovation in the digital era. And it's just really changing how clients buy. And, you know, a lot of cases, what I'm seeing is this ecosystem of solutions. So it's almost like, you know, you don't just buy the car anymore, but people are buying different parts of cars and putting it together, because in our era, it's a lot easier to kind of put things together as a puzzle for a solution. So they might have something from one vendor and something from another vendor. And if they can easily integrate into a full ecosystem, then great. And so it's made the product teams have to think a little bit differently about how they sell the products as well. So instead of selling it as a one full solution, you know, how do we price and package so that we can give different pieces of that solution to clients? And so I'm sure most of you, you know, you probably look at, you know, one of these is probably impacting your products or services to some degree or another. And so again, this creates, you know, I think for companies, it's tough, right? Like it's been great because innovation has been adding a lot of new value to clients and to customers. But it's created this new level of complexity. So, you know, most companies now we've got an aspect of services, aspect of hardware, aspect of software. So, you know, the people that you have to try and figure all this out really have to be superstars in today's world. So one approach I take to pricing, you know, what I'm often asked, or the companies that I used to work with, it's, you know, usually you'd have somebody come and say, hey, here's a service offering, here's a product offering that we have. I don't know, how should we price this? Is it 25,000 or 100,000? I don't look at pricing as being a crystal ball. You know, there's no expert that can necessarily just kind of pick a number out of the hat and that's the right number. But I look at pricing more as a process. And so this is kind of what I really talk to companies when they say, well, how do we price this product? There's a framework and there's a process that you can go through to help answer those questions. And there's tools as well. And we'll talk quickly about some of those tools. And so just to highlight here, you know, the offer design, I really focus on value-based offer design. And so we'll talk about a couple tools where you can link, you know, how do you go about linking that. And so value-based pricing is the flip of cost-based, where, you know, you start with understanding the customer and really trying to articulate your value proposition. And from that, you need to link your price to value. Cost-based is what I think a lot of folks are used to historically, especially on the finance side world. Is you figure out what the product is, you figure out how much it's going to cost you, and you add your level of margin, and then you box your value story into whatever that is. So it kind of really kind of flips the world upside down for a lot of folks to say, you know, first start with, you know, understanding the value that you bring and then link it to price. So easier said than done, though. So one way in the digital world is you've got all these different, you know, components that are rolling up to your overall solution. So this is kind of an example of a what I call a bit of a value waterfall. is that you've got the value of your software, you've got the value of your hardware, you've got your value of your services or the software as a service. And then you have your supporting services and maybe you do some customization for that client as well. And there could be other components too. And you kind of see that for your overall solution, you keep adding more and more value. So as I said before, you know, this digital world is complex. We've got a lot more things and more value we're giving to clients. So it's kind of that question of how do you measure the value of each component? And so what I notice, especially with a lot of companies going through their transformation, is they're kind of stuck in the old way of how they price. So they're bringing on all of this new, you know, technologies and innovation and growing the value, but they really struggle to monetize that. And so suboptimally, there's, you know, a lot of companies that used to sell hardware and they're integrating software, and then they've gone through this whole process. And meanwhile, they're still selling the hardware they used to sell it the last 20 years. Definitely suboptimal. And what to me that signals is they didn't go through that process of, you know, articulating the value proposition and understand what it really does for the customers and clients. And then linking that to a new pricing strategy. They didn't enable their sales force in terms of how they should go about selling this new products and all these new services as well. And so there's just gaps all around this framework. So the offer design wasn't done properly. The enablement piece wasn't done properly. And then when they put it into the market again, so it's kind of like, just imagine if you had a scorecard, all of these would be red in those cases. So that's where I suggest go through this framework. You know, I find pricing is often kind of like a side job for product managers these days. You know, you could spend 30,000 days effort building a product. And only, you know, it's unbelievable how some companies will spend maybe an hour or 2 hours just trying to figure out how to price it. So just imagine how much time you spent building a product and how much time you spent trying to figure out how to, you know, price it. And if you don't price it properly, I mean, this is how you make money. This is how your company makes money. So why are you spending an hour or 2 hours just trying to figure out how you're going to price your product? I mean, spend a good dedicated amount of time to figure it out correctly. So then, of course, it's why all the fuss about going to subscription. And Karen, I guess this really kind of resonates with you as you're trying to migrate to the subscription one. And it's always that kind of year one pain. Like if you've been selling perpetual or term-based licenses, doing that first jump to subscription can be painful for some companies in year one or two. And quite honestly, a lot of these big companies could have gone to subscription models way back before 2010, but they didn't because it didn't necessarily look good for the first 1 or 2 years. I mean, it's hard for a CEO to sell to the board and say, well, we are expecting, you know, based on our subscription, we might actually lose 5 or 10% of our revenue stream during this transition period. But can you imagine if Microsoft or Adobe hadn't migrated to subscription? I mean, this massive growth that they had is largely attributed to the fact that they went away from perpetual licenses to subscription models. And so it took a snapshot of this last week, even after what's going on with COVID. And you can just see that they've been able to weather the storm a lot better with the subscription model as well. And so if you're selling perpetual licenses, I mean, every deal's a fight. You got to fight for every single deal to keep that revenue going. Not so much once you get into a subscription model. And so you can see that Microsoft, you know, they launched their subscription services really 2011. I don't know if you remember when you used to buy Microsoft, you get the CD and that was it. You just paid the one-time fee. Maybe you paid an upgrade insurance on top of it if you wanted to get upgraded in the future as well. But now it's all about, you know, subscription pricing for both Adobe and Microsoft. And their company valuation is, look at that, 6 times, 9.8 times. You know, it was definitely the best decision that they had made. So a couple, I'll just go maybe through about three or four more quick slides, and then let's open it up, you know, and link it to your companies. But just some examples. So usually what, you know, I've held a couple roles in my past as head of pricing for a lot of, one was BlackBerry, the other one was CGI, which is a tech-based company based out of Montreal. And, you know, often I'd see teams coming in that say, hey, we have a brand new product here and we're trying to figure out how to sell it. So this is an example of a artificial intelligence module, and it helped insurance companies, especially in the US, figure out how to, you know, just imagine hospitals and doctor's offices have to submit their claims and the insurance company would pay it out. but there's going to be errors in those claims and there's going to be some fraud as well. And so this module would help detect those errors and claims. And so a couple of approaches the teams took. One was, hey, we spent 20,000 days effort and it cost us $2 million. How about we add 35% margin? And that's going to be our pricing strategy. But unfortunately, they couldn't find client one because it was so high. I mean, you're burdening all your costs onto that first client to try and recover all of your investment. So it wasn't a favorable approach to pricing. The next one, the very more common one, is everybody's guesswork, right? Is here's our product. We're trying to figure out what people are willing to pay. Should we price 50,000 or 100,000? In this case, it was $95,000 per year. So everyone's just kind of putting it out there. And like I said, if you spend 20,000 days effort and you're spending, an hour of guesswork around a table, it's not an optimal way to price your product. Like, go through the right process. So here's an example of, what you want to do, especially with brand new innovation in a marketplace, is understand what is it doing for the client? How does it improve their business? Think about their, talk their language, their key performance indicators and success factors, right? If your product is influencing those KPIs, translate how those KPIs are going to improve because of them using your software, and then put that into a dollar figure. And so this is just an example of that software where, they could say, hey, we're improving your error detection rate by 0.35% and fraud by 0.15%. I mean, to this company, that's a conservative kind of estimate, and it's something they believe that they could achieve by using the software. But when you put it in the dollar figure, it'd be like $8 million extra savings for them in bad payouts. I mean, so $8 million. And then what you can do is you can price in the context of that. So at this example, hey, if that client saves $8 million at our price of $800,000 per year, you're still saving 90% of that overall $8 million. So that's probably, when most people come and they have got a new product and they say, how do I price this product? This is almost my first go-to approach, is to just say, well, tell me what it's doing for the customer. And probably the other two recommendations I have is, one, make sure the numbers are real. If you can back it up with case studies, fantastic. I mean, your goal is to convince a client that this is something they can realistically achieve. Marketers love to take these numbers and just jack them up and make them so high, right? And I think the thought is, the higher the number, the better. But the reality is I find most clients or customers, if they see a number and it's just way too out of reach and they don't believe it, then they're not going to believe your pricing strategy as well. So I usually recommend, be as conservative as you can, but you're trying to get to a number that the client can connect with and say, that's something I think that I can achieve with my business. So the next one here is just taking it to the next level and saying, well, I live in a world of competition. So how do I go about pricing, linking price to value in that case? And so this, I find this is a really useful tool, it's almost like a scoring process, right? Like how do we score relative to the competition from a price and a value perspective? And the benefits of this tool is that it acknowledges that, you can still have a price premium in a marketplace and really succeed if you have the value for it. And there's this one thought of, hey, let's just go out and just see what the competition's doing and we'll just match with the competition. I mean, if your product's the exact same as that other product, then maybe that's the right strategy. But if you have a product that's differentiated, has a lot more value in the marketplace as well, then you have that opportunity to price premium and price above the competition in many cases. But you got to make sure, number one, is that you've articulated your value proposition and that your value is perceived as being a premium in the marketplace with those customers as well. So that's where the marketers have to come in. They got to convince the market that we are the best in the market industry. So this is an actual example of four software companies. And you can see that each one of them had different price points, right? And this one was a premium pricer. And then you had one that was way down low here at this price point. But the value differed between each one of them. And so obviously the one with the highest price had the an outstanding level of value, and they were making sure that they were premium pricers. And so if you can quantify both your price and your score, you can see from in a scale of 1 to 10, these folks scored at a 6.9, whereas the good was only at 6.4, the marginal was at 4.8. There's going to be this trade-off between price and value that customers make. And I find in business-to-business world, usually it's 30% of their decisions based on price and 70% is on value. you can come out with kind of a total quantified score. And this is where you can find, you know, how much can they charge as a premium in the market to make sure that they win, or they're the ones that are gaining market share as well. So how do you get to those numbers is usually the question. Like, there's an underlying, you know, obviously you don't just pick a number out of the blue. There could be like four or five decision drivers that you could score as well that roll up into this number. Some market research as well can help you understand how you're positioned in the market relative to competition as well. So I find this is a really good exercise to go through to really understand, one, why people are buying from you, and two, how they perceive you in the marketplace, where there's areas that you're better, or maybe you're even value disadvantaged as well. Okay, and just maybe one or two more things here is just, you know, how you package and the metrics that you use is also going to be very important. If you're in a position where your product is kind of like a good, better, best, and I think I'm trying to remember, somebody had mentioned, you know, how do you fence your offering? You know, this is definitely one area to really think about, is to say, okay, well, you know, even here, just taking a quick example, you got your personal, business, pro at different price points as well, right? And so this approach can be used to do your fencing and fence one market segment from another, because you don't want them kind of going across each other and saying, well, this is the person I want to sell to here. I don't want them to buy, you know, this price point of a package. I want them to stay in this zone here. So really think through the features and the services that you offer here that kind of stop them from going, you know, to these kind of lower packages and being satisfied with those lower price points. I mean, that's a tough thing to do, is trying to figure out, well, how do you fence between each of these? And your goal is that you're really trying to address different market segments with each of these packages. Once you get into the larger B2B, it's not so easy as just saying a good, better, best. I mean, you're dealing with scenarios where you have much more complexity in your packaging. You got to worry about that on-premise and migrating customers from on-prem to a SaaS environment. Maybe you're dealing with requests for proposals, or you have deals that they're looking at, you know, three or four vendors at a time and scoring you to determine who to go with. So there's a variety of different considerations depending on how complex your product is. And choosing that metric's going to be key too. And I've got a couple, you know, what I mean by metric is, If you want to be pricing your software around, let's say, $100,000 per year, do you use a per user fee? Is there a different type of metric you want to look at? And, go through that exercise to really think through it. I think a lot of people revert just based on our business to consumer experience. A lot of companies revert to a per user approach. And for businesses, especially B2B, that might actually not be the right metric to use. I think it's a comfortable metric. But think through the right metric that's the best reflection of value. And that insurance company we talked about, they just did a per user one, and they weren't making anything close to the amount of money that they should. I mean, the value that they were delivering was finding payouts. And so they actually reverted more to using a per transaction fee, the per claim fee, as their metric. And their revenues just shot through the roof as a result of using this alternative metric. So again, think through it as a process and evaluate different options and see which one's the best one for your company. And the last slide I have here is just, you know, really thinking about optimization is important too. And here's a case study where this company had two offers, at $10 per month, to $20 per month. And they were cannibalizing. They wanted as many people as possible to go to this $20 option, but they didn't want to lose clients by changing their price. So they did a price test, and they took that $10 up to $15. And they didn't lose any overall volume. In fact, they got the exact same volume. But what happened here is those folks that were paying 15 said, it's almost like the low hanging fruit. And they said, well, if I'm paying 15, you know, what is it for me to just go to the next level at $20 per month? That one change, they didn't change anything about their product strategy at all. All they did was just changed a bit of their pricing strategy. And next thing you know, they almost drew 50% or 45% growth in their revenue just by this one tweak, right? Imagine that. Just one small tweak in your company, and now all of a sudden you're making 45% more just by doing that. So you can see the importance of pricing, especially in software these days, is just monumental in its impact in terms of your overall company valuation. So that's it. Like, I usually do about a 1 day or a 2 day full course on this. And so you guys got the rapid, super high level kind of considerations, but hopefully it's planted the seed. But let's get a good discussion going. I mean, this is your chance to ask me any question that's related to your business, and happy to help
That's great. Thank you so much, Scott. Really helpful, I think, to give us some context about how to think of, you know, pricing in different scenarios. So what I'd love to do is for somebody to sort of volunteer, you know, your specific pricing challenge, and let's drill into it a bit and certainly learn from each other, but also, you know, from Scott, and then we can, you know, sort of see where that goes. But is there anybody like Jeff? Yeah, you said that you were struggling with some of that stuff right now. Tell us a little bit more and where the challenge is.
I could, I was going to make an observation just on the presentation. On the slide that you showed with the five different pricing models for software, where you basically could pick any one of them, I read a book called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. I think it was in that book where they actually, and it's an old book, but they actually talk about that scenario. And it's really interesting where they basically, what they're saying is you determine ahead of time what you want your client to click on. You determine where you want to channel your clients. You build your pricing and the value so that you know you're going to channel most of your clients probably to that middle one. That's where you want them to be. So in their case, they were in his case, what he was saying is that it's not by accident that you get there. It's actually by design. Yeah. And they didn't expect in their case for most clients to pick either extreme. They were trying to get them to the price that they wanted, which was higher than it would have been if they just had one selection or two selections.
Yeah, great point. And there's a psychology approach where it's a good, better, best, and the best is actually used as a decoy. And you know, you hear these stories. You go into a bar and they've got this bottle of wine, and it's like $5,000, right? It's, if somebody buys it, fantastic, but their intention isn't necessarily to have somebody buy the $5,000 bottle of wine. The intention is to gravitate the ones that were going to buy the $10 up to the $30 one. And it's the psychology of everybody who kind of wants to go more to the middle, right? And there's a great, what's his name? Dan Ariely is a professor in behavior economics. And if you got the time, I mean, he's got a fantastic YouTube video that I love watching every now and then. I'll go back to it. But he talks about all of these kind of weird economic buying behavior things and how you can influence it. So yeah, a great point. Yeah, I suppose even in your domain, Jeff, I don't know if you do a good, better, best, but maybe put an Uber super premium service that just looks ridiculous. But you know, your goal is for everybody to go to the middle one, right?
Well, our challenge in our industry is that 40% of bookkeeping / accounting firms have moved to a fixed price model.
Yeah.
Whereas 60% have remained on an hourly model. And there's a lot to it without going and boring everybody with all the detail. But the bottom line is that I actually, I think that the interesting challenge that I think is going on is that by going to a fixed price model, essentially you're accepting the risk of your client. Mm-hmm. In other words, if volumes go up, you need to react by changing your pricing. Whereas there's pressure always to beat your staff down to deliver the same thing in fewer hours. Whereas on an hourly model, your challenge is to have your staff perform efficiently. So basically that they're, you know, good work ethic type of thing. So it's a completely different way that you manage your company in a services business like mine, in terms of whether you go with a variable pricing model based on hourly or a fixed fee model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. David's asking about how some of the psychology stuff applies in a B2B space.
Yeah. Let me explain what I mean. So I remember a number of years ago, I had a lunch with the CEO, CEO of Hostopia, and they were a consumer hosting platform that worked on sort of whatever model they worked on. But he was, I remember we were talking, and he was telling me that if you can get a service for consumers at $49, that's magic. That price per month, nobody cares, and so forth. So the question is, are there any magic, we don't care numbers for small, medium, or large businesses that you've seen out there? And so forth, because I presume it would be a different number depending on the size of the business. Because apparently once you go beyond that number, then they're saying, oh my gosh, that's expensive when you think about it.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the, like, you know, especially in B2B, I mean, you could still have some simplified kind of good, better, best offerings that, you know, for example, if it's a named user and it's less than $100, I mean, it's kind of creeping into that space of where you could still use B2C price points in your models. But then there's also the B2B that I find, you know, a lot of the, when I worked with CGI and whatnot, I mean, we're dealing with 100,000 to 500,000 to, you know, multi-million dollar deals. I mean, how do you use a price psychology point in that case? And it really became not about the price point to help make somebody a decision, but it was more about that that scoring matrix that we had and trying to optimize that. And so the, you know, it's not like if somebody is evaluating three or four options and they're going to be paying $500,000, I mean, the price psychology point you use isn't what matters. What mattered more in those decisions were how are you priced relative to that competitor. So I find price psychology plays a role in B2B when you have these very defined packages that are sold in almost like a B2C style. But as your offering and your implementations are a lot more complex, I find those rules of thumb that you use for price psychology are less applicable.
I guess another, Scott, another aspect that is, you know, we don't always think about is the mechanics of the buying process, right? So there, we certainly know that there, in many organizations, you know, there are certain thresholds that a manager can sign off on without having to get, you know, a more senior approval, right? And so if you can figure out what those thresholds are, then that may work into some of the psychology as well.
Yep. Yeah, you bet.
Hey, cool. Scott, I have a two-part question, if there's still time for that.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
So I've got one issue, which is, so the space we're in is filled with VC-backed competitors.
Yeah.
That already tells you a lot. And so these competitors are coming in and pricing not based on SaaS pricing. They monetize on the basis of getting residuals from payment partners. So that, I mean, they don't really care actually about the licensing. It's really just kind of a skin in the game almost for them, for the way they work with their customers.
Yeah.
And that's not what we're doing because the payment residual model is counterintuitive to larger businesses, right? Mm-hmm. So they charge a very high fee, which is not acceptable to a certain size of customer. We're targeting the size of customer who would never accept that size of fee, right? But it's a migration problem for existing customers because it's like, there's actually very few players in the space we're trying to get into. So really right now we're in a space where everybody's either, like as an example, Lightspeed and Shopify versus Oracle. I mean, that's kind of like the gap we're dealing with here. And so trying to really kind of create that price space in the middle for that mid-tier, that has been an issue. And then the second thing is going back to some of the metrics you talked about. It's getting really complex because we started to do, like you mentioned about showing the value, because we have a lot of features which are obviously differentiated and that add a lot of value and therefore, you know, kind of I can show that. But then we actually ended up wanting to go with two metrics for pricing.
Yep.
And the reason why is a combination of costing, because once we get to the mid-tier, our true cost of hosting is different and the way we priced out is different because it's a long story, but we're pricing based on station, login station, or instance. We like to use the word of like, the comparison is active logins like Netflix.
Yeah.
And then we priced it based on number of transactions together combined. But we don't charge based on stores. We don't charge based on users because that's how everybody else prices.
Yeah.
It's been hard to explain to people. But if I were to price any other way, I would have a costing problem eventually.
Yeah.
And I think I would attract the wrong type of customer. So it's complicated. Trying to explain all of this into a tiered pricing grid has been just a disaster because there's so many moving parts. We tried using like, you know, not toggles, but like something where people could actually pull and then they could actually play around with the pricing. But it's also just, should we even be doing something that complicated or is this something we have to figure out, like not show as much? And of course it's a huge problem because in launching a startup, we have only the first tier. The other ones are kind of like coming soon, right? We don't really want to say coming soon because if you do, people will just kind of wait for coming soon. especially if we show features, right?
Yep.
So it has been a bit of a struggle for us.
Yeah, and you're not alone, Karen. I mean, that's it seems like your offering fits into that, you know, I showed kind of two B2B type models. One's kind of that more B2C space, good, better, best. And is it 49 or 99 or 129? Yeah. You live in that more complex world. And so what I'd suggest is, again, like there's no silver bullet answer, right, for pricing. It's a process. Mm-hmm. So what I usually recommend where you've got all these options and all these possible metrics is go through an exercise to say, well, and it's okay, actually, B2B, like I've worked with companies and they've got like, it's almost like this menu where you could actually have like, you know, you don't want too many metrics because it becomes a bit of a black box for a client. And they're just like, just tell me what I owe. You know, I don't want to see 6 to 8 metrics. But in your world too, it's okay not to have just one as well, because if you just use one metric, you might be pricing suboptimally as well. So it's okay to have 2 to 4 metrics in B2B. And usually what I do is I go through a process and I say, okay, well, let's look at 3 options about how you could price, which metrics you could have. And then it's almost like go through a checklist and it's like 7 questions to ask yourself to say, okay, well, which one's the best option? I mean, some will have pros and cons and some will be, you know, more favorable than the other. And by the time you get to the end of your checklist, it's like, okay, well, let's go with option B. And some of the key questions I like to ask really is, you know, is the metric that you're using a good reflection of the value that your product delivers? And so that was the example I was giving where, you know, that company, the AI company, they just used a per user fee, but it wasn't the best metric. It was just a knee-jerk kind of go-to metric that everyone was comfortable with, but it wasn't the right one. So their per transaction was a better reflection. So that's one of the questions about value. The other one is really around, is it sellable? Like, do you have to find in your sales process, you're spending more time trying to explain your metrics to clients than you are actually selling the value of your product offering. I mean, that can create a bit of a hiccup trying to sell the product if they don't really understand the metrics, especially if you're doing something different that's in the industry. Not to say that's not the right choice, but it's one of those, you know, considerations when you're evaluating different options. So it might be a con and you just have to work through, well, how do we, you know, make it more sellable and explain it better to the client as well. The other thing too is, you know, does it fit in your system? You know, you could have the best metrics in the world, but your system isn't ready to be able to bill it or invoice for it. So maybe you have to wait 6 months to be able to do that as well. So that's my approach is, again, pricing is a process. There's no silver bullet answer, but evaluate, you know, 2-3 really good options and just kind of walk through that scenario to say, okay, which is the best model that works for us that is going to help us deliver and be able to sell to those clients and at the same time maximize the true value of our offering.
So Scott, it sounds like, you know, there's a bit of kind of running some simulations almost, right? So you, mm-hmm. It's like experimentation and testing, you know, that we do in discovery and the product itself, right? Which is, you know, you kind of iterate through something you run some tests, you know, based on a hypothesis. And you actually simulate, okay, what would be the outcome of this if, you know, 70% of our customers paid this, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so you model it and then figure out, you know, which might be optimal. Is that kind of a recommended approach?
Yeah, it could be, yeah. And so I would say that's a next step approach. Like when you look at the options and you think through it, sometimes just, you know, evaluating each of those options, you can get rid of one or two right off the bat, and then maybe you're left with 2 key options, and then you can do your deep dive and do the modeling. What I found a really useful exercise as well is if you've got some really good partners, you know, sometimes people partner with the beta client, and the beta client's the one that they'll be as honest and open with you as, you know, it's almost like they're your good friend, and they'll tell you. I find use that to your advantage. And if you've got some options, talk to them and just say, hey, we really need help. We need your view. You know, the client hat to say, hey, if we pitch this style of approach to another client, like what's your opinion? What's the downfall? What's the upfall? So there's one customer right now that's what they're doing. They've got a fantastic beta client and it's gold. I mean, they're really asking these key questions around their pricing approach. And that client's just full on honest about, you know, what works, what doesn't work.
What's your recommendation on approaches to testing pricing? Like, yeah, you can talk to a, you know, a friendly client like that and get, you know, get them their feedback and stuff. But what if you're in, you know, more of a SaaS, you know, sort of higher volume space? How do you approach, actually getting some data around testing different pricing models, maybe internationally too, as another idea, you know?
Yeah. And that was that one case example, right? The $10 and the $20 one. If you've got the capabilities in your system, maybe you can segment some sample that when people come to visit the site, you can test different price points, or a lot of companies do that in different regions. For example, when you sign into something and it says, tell us which state you're from. I mean, part of the reason they're asking for where you're from is because in the back end, they're readjusting their offers based on your location, right? So that's another kind of way is when they come in, ask them a question, boom, you've just segmented them into some other category, and you can give them different pricing offers.
Yeah,
a little bit harder in B2B, like Karen's world. I mean, it's not like you can go out and do testing. It's kind of trial by error, really. But just make sure that you've done your homework before, doing the trial by error.
Does it make sense when you're kind of taking that trial by error approach to start high and move down, or start lower and move up? I mean, any suggestions on that as a strategy?
It's always easier to lower your prices than it is to increase your prices. Yeah. I guess, Jeff, you probably noticed that recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have about 5 minutes left, and I just want to turn the discussion maybe a little towards dealing with this current, pandemic environment, and mm-hmm. How would you suggest, folks think about their pricing or adjustments to it in order to, ride through this or retain clients as best they can, but also to recover on the other side and get back to profitability at that point. What would you suggest?
Yeah, so a couple of suggestions, and it's definitely a hot topic right now. And again, there's no magic wand recipe, but what I find in an era like this is, value is key, and your value messaging is key. I find as well, there's, everyone's objectives have changed in the last week and a half at different companies. Their challenges and pain points have changed. I mean, living in Toronto, most folks will know somebody in the banking sector and the mortgages, for example. I mean, with all these deferrals, like people are working 12, 14 hours and trying to deal with all these different circumstances. And so sometimes that's a bit of an opportunity, right? So one way, what I've been telling most folks these days is you got to understand from a client viewpoint, what's their new objectives, what's changed, what's their new pain points, and whatever solution that you have, is there something that you can do to change from a, not just a pricing perspective, but, think your own product strategy and how you package and the services you have. I mean, you've got to shift those quickly to address potentially new pain points and new needs with clients. And so think about your services. Think about if you can realign your software packaging to address some of these new needs as well. So that's kind of one approach, is just think of it more holistically, right? And how do you fit into their new world and understand their new world? From a pricing side and software as well, is I think what you want to avoid is the knee jerk, let's just cut our rates all by 50%. Because like I said, it's harder to take your prices back up. Maybe think about some temporary promos, and just make sure that it's linked and they know, hey, we're going to help you out in year one. We realize that you've got some pain points in year one. We're running a promo. So at least you still maintain, I call it a price anchor. Like they know that your price is still $100 per user, but maybe you're willing to do a promo down here. But you make sure that you message and say, by the way, this is the normal price. And you always have that reference point, as opposed to this, them knowing that, hey, this is going to be my price going forward forever and ever. So, if you do a promo, just worry about year one, right? Like you're trying to get a client that you could sign up for the next 5 to 10 years. You don't want them having a price point that's COVID-19 for the next 10 years. So just figure out if there's a way that you can frame it differently that helps them, understand, and they get that you get the COVID-19 kind of environment, right?
But look at the longer, lifetime value of the customer, right? I think that's a great suggestion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeff, did you want to add something?
I was just going to pick up on that. And that's what we did to these clients who are in difficulty. We said to them, okay, what we'll do is in recognition of the times we're in, we'll defer our price increase until June 1st.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. That's great. So we're almost out of time, but Scott, any parting words or advice on, where people could start that process, resources? I mean, obviously they can get in touch with you, but You know, what would be the first steps for, you know, some of these folks on getting the process started?
Yeah, you know, I'd say like this is the first step is there's a lot of networking that's going on these days. I've counted now 4 webinars in the last 2 weeks alone, just talking about pricing and talking about how to price in a downturn. I've got another webinar that's coming up with the another association, the ISPMA, the Software Association. And you know, there's just a lot of questions around best practices for this stuff. So what I suggest is just keep what we're doing now. Like a lot of it is just networking, asking questions, taking advantage of these type of forums as well. Obviously, we have to think differently in this upcoming time, and it's, you know, it's really stressful for a lot of organizations that are trying to figure out how do you maneuver fast. I mean, it's only been 2 weeks really that I think people have had their aha that I got to pivot and I got to pivot fast. I got to figure something out fast. And so, you know, try and take advantage of all these kind of best practice forums and webinars and just get your teams thinking. And so we're going to have to think differently but think about differently in terms of the, you know, put your client's hat on as much as you possibly can and think about their world and how your product can help meet some of their challenges.
That's great. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate the time and the sharing of the knowledge. Ryan, back to you and just a quick wrap up.
Yeah, so obviously, thanks, Scott. Once again, that was pretty awesome. And obviously, thank you. Hopefully, if there are any questions, please, give Scott a shout out or connect with him on LinkedIn. Obviously, thank you, Lee. For getting this all together. Upcoming peer groups that we have coming up. Friday is our CEO peer group. We run it the first Friday of the month, but there's been an ask to run it again. So we're doing 2 CEO sessions this month, so this Friday. And then next week, we have the CIO peer group. We'll be talking with Anthony Iannucci. He's the CIO of Richmond Hill, and he's going to be talking about what's going on with CIOs right now, right across the board from most municipalities, how they've been able to cope and work with COVID. And also next week, we have a lunch and learn session. Navigating your business, we will be doing a 1-hour session talking about government economic relief with Frank Belota of SBLR, cybersecurity discussion with Dominic Connick of Webs Depot, and Peter McCabe of ProLink Insurance will be on that lunch and learn discussion. So we're looking forward to that. Cal, do you have anything else to add?
No, I think you covered it all. Basically, through the month of May, we're opening it up to everybody. Obviously, TechConnex is a member-driven organization. And we right now are trying to help businesses out there who are struggling as well to learn, one, some new things about just helping their businesses run. And make sure that you join. You can... join through the month of May and just register through our website. Sorry. Perfect. And May is going to be, May will be updated. I'm just working with the facilitators right now and we'll have that on the calendar shortly.
Great. Yeah, and I guess the other thing is all the sessions that we're doing are being recorded. So if anybody is unable to attend, they are on our website, or if you want to go back for notes, we're doing that as well. And we're also doing podcasts as well. So I just put up a podcast on how to start a podcast. So, so as much results
as... That's the meta podcast, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I love
so,
it.
So obviously thank you everybody for attending. We'll probably see a few of you tomorrow for the CEO session. With that, thank you once again. Have a great day. Get outside. Enjoy the... It's 2 degrees right here in Uxbridge right now. So it's another nice chilly day. But with that, we will see you all next month. And thank you again, Scott and Lee.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks,
everybody. Be safe and stay healthy. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.